Donalena Kitchen talks about food. Donalena Kitchen talks recipes. Donalena Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalena Kitchen. My name is Lana Nuptic.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
This is the Donalena Kitchen. We gather here once a week, live on Tuesday at noon. You can hear us repeated at 7 p.m. in the evening if you just can't get enough of us. And we are at the studios of KHOI Community Radio. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Yes, the Donalena Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, member-based, farmer-led nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, practicalfarmers.org. And our new friend also is the Mucky Duck Pub, where the pub means community. Find out about their annual Burns Night Supper to be held on Friday, January 25th at Ryman Gardens. For more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Thanks to our underwriters, and thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us today. It is kind of sliding into the holidays. We're kind of sitting around here saying, oh, you wouldn't believe the lines in the store. And I was just at the post office this morning. All those lines, all the people.
Yeah, but the weather is not doing its thing, you know?
No, it isn't quite. But that's all right. It makes the lines a bit more bearable. And the running around that you,
well, that's true.
You think you're going to simplify every year. And you don't. So you stand in line, and I hope everyone is civil and everyone has a good smile for everybody else.
Yes, because after all, that is the spirit of the holidays, please.
It is.
Behave
please,
yourselves.
Please.
Kindness, cheer, thoughtfulness.
Yeah.
All that sort of thing.
Well, we've got holidays.
Oh, yeah.
Coming.
Solstice is on Friday.
Yeah, you said this is an auspicious solstice.
Yes, it's an auspicious solstice. Okay, of course, solstice is the longest night of the year, right? And it is a non-denominational holiday that everybody all over the planet is getting either summer or winter solstice, depending on where you are on the big ground globe. And this year, sometimes the peak of it is, I believe, late in the afternoon on Friday. And then we have a sort of very close to full moon that night.
Oh.
Which is peaking sometime early the next day. Now, apparently, having the full moon on the solstice is a rarity and is not happening again until somewhere very late in the century. So that makes it auspicious.
I like the word auspicious.
Yes.
We could use some auspice right now.
Yes, we certainly could. And it will probably be, since the skies are fairly clear, should be quite beautiful.
Good.
So get those candles out. You know, I actually turn off all the electric lights on the solstice evening, and everything is either kerosene lamps or candles.
It'll do it.
Yes, it's quite fun.
Very good.
And children love that sort of thing if they don't burn the house down.
They can talk about all the ancient times.
Yes, what the old folks do.
Oh,
like
good.
We used to tease my mom. Back in the pioneer days, what did you do, Mom? You know, of course, she was born in 1911, but that's a long time ago now.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
It is. Well, here's to everyone wishing you the best in your plans for the holiday. We have a guest around our kitchen table here today, a very nice woman who just does all sorts of things, and she has a great farm. She has an interest in teaching kids about farming. Mary Hillman, welcome. Welcome to the Donalena Kitchen.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here at the Donalena Kitchen.
Great. Mary has a farm called Mary's Farm, and grow things she does. Tell us where your farm is and how you got started farming.
Yes, I am 35 miles west of Ames, Iowa, Grand Junction, rural Grand Junction. I'm 2 miles north on gravel, kind of out there in the middle of nowhere, which I love.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Have you always been there? How did you get started farming?
I started farming actually as a little girl. My parents farmed. And
in the same place?
No, not in the same place. But I am on a family farm that belongs to my father-in-law. And I actually bought the farm and own the farm. And so I'm very proud of that. And I have a over a 100-year-old home on the farm that I restored.
Ooh,
that
fun.
Was moved from Grand Junction and totally refinished. I have the original 1940s barn where my chickens are.
So you did the house moving?
We had hired a company to move, but redid all the woodwork, all the wooden floors. It's got the plate rail, the open staircase.
Oh.
And people in town thought it needed to be torn down, but it is a gem. It's just a beauty.
Good. It sounds like something that's a nice place to gather for the holidays. Very good.
It is. It's so fun to decorate. It's a lot of family memories. The original machine shed is on the place. The original 1940s would have been hog barn. It's now my chicken barn is on the place. The new corn crib that was built in 1951 is on the place. And so it's just, it's got a lot of good family memories.
And what do we do with the corn crib these days?
Actually, I converted down below because it was pretty state-of-the-art. It had a elevator that would take up the corn cob and take it up and distribute it to both sides of the crib. And actually, in the early 80s, I did that, which I did as a kid, where you got to fill the sides. You kick the corn in the sides.
On the ear.
In the ear, and then you let it set all winter, and then the corn sheller would come out and do it in the winter. But you could drive through the alleyway with a small tractor. You could dump the grain. Now I've converted that part of it to another chicken barn. So it's spillover for summer when I'm doing, like, raising my new pullets.
So very good. So you raise chickens. Chickens, and what else is on your farm?
I have ducks on the farm. And when I was raising my four daughters, they were very heavily involved in 4-H. So one time we had cattle, we had hogs. We got very much into showing rabbits and specialized in satin rabbits and also many
lots. What's a satin rabbit?
Satin rabbit is just a gorgeous rabbit. It's a meat rabbit. And we never butchered. But they're just so sweet.
Now, I'm pretty good about eating what I grow, but I must, I think rabbits kind of, they're so good. Satin rabbits, how nice. They sound
A rabbit is really good. So if somebody's hunting the rabbits, and they are a nuisance in my neighborhood. But they're so good. Nothing like a wild Iowa rabbit.
We grew up on a lot of wild rabbit and squirrel and pheasant. But a satin rabbit, they come in many colors. And one of the beauties is like a Siamese satin. But there's also red. There's black. And so if you really know your rabbits, and we would breed, and we would have maybe 70 rabbits at a time. Because then you would call out the ones, and then you'd sell them to other 4-H'ers, and, so just the kind of the real meaning of learning to farm.
To handle livestock.
Your records. Yes.
That's a good size for kids to learn on. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But you have lots of chickens now. What do you do with all your chickens? Certainly they're not all 4-H projects.
No. After my girls left home, and I could see people were finally getting on board with healthy food, which is how I was raised as a kid and how I raised my daughters, always garden and canning. I thought, I would really like to do this. And I heard about Farm to Folk over here in Ames. And so I went from a small flock of birds to now I have 400 laying hens. And then I raise usually 1,000 to 1,200 meat broilers a year.
Now, that's a little larger than my flock, Mary.
Where do you have to take them for processing?
I have to take them to be state inspected. Yes. So if you want to resell, that's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. And there's only two places left in the state that you can do that you get that state inspected stamp. And I go to Valley View Poultry at Bloomfield, Iowa. An Amish family actually butchers for me. So it's very cool.
Oh,
it's Freeman and Sarah. Everybody working there comes up in their little buggy. They have a horse hitch. It's a sign, actually, that it's an Amish trail. In the summertime, nobody is wearing shoes except for the men. They're all barefoot.
Oh, very good.
And so it's just, it's really.
I don't get that. Why do the men wear shoes and the women don't?
I don't know. But that's just how it is. Little boys will be running around barefoot. And I remember doing that as a little girl and running up and down the gravel. I could not do that now. But the state inspector knows me, and so they check over your birds, and they just do a very good job. Everything's very clean, very nice. So
that's great. How many chickens go to be processed at a time, all at once? Or
usually I'll do about 250 a batch, And, you know, I'm a smaller farmer, but I also want to do small batches, raise them humanely. Everything is well taken care of. I say they have one bad day.
Yes, oh, they do.
And how old are they when you butcher usually?
It depends on the size that I want to raise. I work with a lot of chefs, top mm-hmm. chefs in Des Moines. So to plate the bird, they might want just right at 3 pound. Some people want 3.5 pounds. Individual customers such as Farm to Folk or friends that buy from me want maybe that 4 pound bird or 5 pound bird. I kept back a dozen with this last batch I just butchered last week, and they were 7, 8, 9 pound birds.
I like that kind. That's very good. Oh, very good.
Roasters for the holidays. And what's breed? What are you doing?
Well, a lot of people don't understand. Some people are confused. There's growth hormone, which makes the meat breast, but they don't do that with any birds.
Yeah.
It is the breed of bird. And so I get a jumbo Cornish cross, which has been bred to really grow a nice big breast meat and grow fast. Mm-hmm. And so you can raise them in 6 to 8 weeks.
It's amazing.
It is. And if you ever look at the difference between like a laying hen or a regular bird, they have a real short leg. It's a lot thicker leg around to support that breast meat. But also, if you're a wise farmer, you don't overfeed them, just like a horse or an animal that would fodder itself, eating too much food. Mm-hmm. They should not have feed more than 8 hours a day. So I just feed them in the morning. Always make sure they have water available, nice dry bedding, and just feed them once a day.
Oh, my God. Do they, in the summertime, do they get to, like, run out and experience green stuff?
Yes. You can get some really nice poultry netting from Washington, Iowa, and I have like a solar panel on that. So you do want to get them out. My laying hens, I just open up the door and I have a six-acre farm, and they just go everywhere, which can be disaster for gardens. So then I have to have all the gardens fenced off because chickens can go through a garden really quickly.
Yeah, they're like mini goats, kind of.
Yes, they are. And I know some people think, you know, they can be in there for the manure, but I have.
Oh, how romantic.
Yes. It sounds romantic, but But I have a compost pile. And like last year when I dug into that, I'm not your typical woman. I didn't go out and buy a bunch of furniture for myself one day. I bought myself a Kubota tractor.
Oh, good for you.
And I love it. I love my tractor. And so it's got a really nice bucket on it, a nice 60-inch mower deck to mow the place. And then my pride is my Land Pride 60-inch tiller, which
because you do vegetables too.
Yes. So I have 7 gardens. I have 2 acres of produce. And so then I can just walk right through the gardens. And this year, with all the rain, when the weeds got out of control, just mowed them off. I'm not going to kill myself. So it just has been great. But I can pull that right up to the barn, clean out the pens, and then go down to the compost pile. And then I can also push it in really well to turn it over. Anything I put on the garden this year, it was soil. And people do not understand. You take care of your soil. You take care of everything in your place because it is a living organism.
Very good. Very good. And 3 cheers for being comfortable on a tractor. Boy, you can do a whole lot more on a tractor. Try that, too.
Well, and doesn't it extend the ability to farm more into your elder years?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because in the past, I mean, I could still do it. But when you're hauling with a big wheelbarrow, all those loads to the compost, and with me working, I also work full-time at a school district, then it just, you know, you're out there in the dark. I mean,
Yeah, tractors.
Yay, tractors.
They're kind of like vacuum cleaners.
So I cleaned the hens just this Sunday. You know, anybody that this time of year, you're like, wow, okay, this is good barn cleaning weather, right?
Good weather. Yeah. Cool and sunny.
Yes. And so, you know, that was 4 hours.
Yeah.
With a tractor.
Woohoo! Good for you. Get back to how you deal with 250 chickens all at one time. You mentioned Farm to Folk, which is a CSA. You mentioned friends, and people love chicken. How long have you been selling to chefs, to restaurants?
I started selling to Farm to Folk. I saw my first check December 1st, 2010. Mm-hmm. And then I just thought, I tried a little bit of farmers markets. Mm-hmm. They're fun, but it's very unpredictable selling. And so with me being the very busy person I am, I thought if I could make some contacts with restaurants, they would be regular accounts. And then it would be – I would know what the order is, which I really like about Farm to Folk. And then I'd know what I'm delivering. So I just on a whim, you know, started contacting restaurants.
Very good. How did you convince them that your chickens – are not only good to eat, but are worth the price that you have to have. These are good chickens. This is not just off the truck someplace. So how do you talk to a chef about chicken?
I told them, for one thing, I could deliver fresh, not frozen, which I also do with customers here in Ames. And so, in fact, I did that last week. So when I butchered, then I turned around. It's a lot of work to come home. I'm up at 2:45 a.m., outside at 3, loading my birds, going all the way, you know, 3.5-hour drive, coming back, sorting through the birds, and then taking them down there. So they know, I mean, there's nothing like a fresh bird, number one.
That's great.
If they are frozen, they know they've not been in a storage area like a commercial 4 months. Mm-hmm. They also know there is no antibiotics in the feed that I get. Mm-hmm. And so they also, I think a number of chefs have really tried to support the local farming community.
That is a really fine thing that has happened lately. So you sell many of your birds go to the Des Moines restaurant market?
Yes. And the other thing that really did that I figured out very quickly, so I first sold to Churchill's Greenbrier and also the cheese shop.
They
expanded, went on to the cheese bar now. But then chefs talk between each other.
A lot.
And they all know each other. And I also sold at Hawk downtown Des Moines.
Oh, yes.
And
that's Hawk, H-O-Q.
H-O-Q. Oh. That just got to be too far of a distance because it is 65 miles for me to Des Moines. But he had talked to some other chefs, and then from there, somebody suggested I get a hold of another restaurant because they were really interested because they could not find good quality birds anywhere, and they recommended me. And so I would say Farm to Folk gave me my start because I could mention them. But then from there, I could say, well, I'm selling at Trostel's. Well, then my daughter had a wedding reception at Chantreau, so I hit up the chef there, and the sous chef from the cheese bar went over to be the sous chef at Chantreau. And so then that was my end to get a hold of the executive chef. And then the executive chef from Chantreau went over to Django. And so Derek said, hey, I still want all your product. And I'm going to tell John over at Chantreau to still keep buying things. So that's just how you grow business. You just got to be smart.
And with the chef, here's how you convince them. They taste it and then they want it.
Yes. And I did take in samples. I took in eggs. I took in duck eggs, which I also have duck eggs. I took in my meat birds. And I think if they know you're going to give them a really good quality product. And also you just kind of become friends with them. What is cool now is I have everybody's number and I just text what I have available for chickens, eggs, produce. They also buy livers. I've also sold hearts, gizzards.
Oh, very good. Very good. Do not throw away all those good parts. Every now and then you do find, some of these restaurants I've ordered, I like chicken liver. And I figure, well, these people ought to be buying healthy chickens. I bet that's a healthy liver. And I ask, and yes, they do. And thank you. Yes.
Yes. So I sold like all of my livers fresh to Trostel's. And a number of people like to make a liver pate also.
Oh, I always bet they were fighting over those chicken livers.
They were.
Does some pates and has, well, pork and chicken livers. Yeah.
And the Amish are very thrifty. They'll always ask you if you want those or not because they won't automatically give them to you. That's because they can resell them.
Aha! Yeah. Uh-huh.
You also don't want to tell them where you're selling.
Oh, yeah.
They are very good at making money, the Amish people. They are very wise about doing business. So I like doing business with them, but you also need to be wise. And they don't charge additional for the livers or the hearts, but they do charge extra for the gizzards. And people go, why? I go, because you have to clean out the gizzard.
Oh, yeah, that's
And how do you know that? Well, when I was a little girl growing up,
How you butchered a few chickens, right?
Right. Well, my love of chickens became one of my youngest memories. I probably was no more than 4 or 5 years old, is dragging the 5-gallon bucket across the barnyard to the hen house. And back in the 50s, you would have had the traditional fenced-off house, so you had no livestock, and then a fenced-off barnyard in case the livestock got out. And we had 20 head of Angus cattle for a cow-calf operation, a milk cow, our hog barn, and then, of course, eggs. And back then, the egg money was my mom's grocery money, and that's all you had. And we would clean them up. Well, my sisters, 2 older sisters, claimed they were scared of the chickens. So Mary always had to do the chicken chores.
Oh.
But I fell in love with the chickens. And then they would raise, of course, about 100 birds every spring. And they tend to be more roosters. And we'd always cheer the day because the roosters would chase us.
Yeah.
And so the whole family would line up at my grandma's, and we'd have an assembly line butchering our own birds. And my job was cleaning the gizzard, which I thought was really cool because you could just find all kinds of things inside the gizzard.
It's a science experiment.
Yes. And people go, oh, that's gross. I go, no, it's really cool.
Well, I have this theory that if you start children at a young age with that sort of thing, they don't think it's gross.
No.
It's fascinating.
It is. And then I think, too, when you grow the life of any livestock respectfully, and then you butcher them humanely, which the Amish people do, is how they kill a bird and butcher them, or you butcher at home, then you really want to respectfully eat all that meat or use every bit of that.
Waste not, want not.
Waste not, want not. You mentioned, well, you've, besides not the broilers sound like plenty of work, plus your produce, then there's eggs which need to be fussed with every day, and you have not only chicken eggs, but duck eggs.
Yum.
Yeah. I just heard a yum from Don.
I love duck eggs. They're very interesting. I mean, they're really essentially like a big chicken egg, but they're just a little bit richer.
I was just going to say they are a richer egg. Uh-huh. Chefs really like them for that, for specialty for like pastas. I know one of my chefs came up with an awesome dish where they served pasta and then they had the duck egg on it.
Like and poached or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Uh-huh. Yes. And they just have a huge yolk.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're very, very, they're just a deep orange color.
Yeah, and the shells are harder.
Oh, yes.
So I did this thing one time. I think it was the time Dan Barber was in Ames. So I took the duck eggs and I was really careful to preserve the shells. And then I made a duck egg salad, you know, just like an egg salad, but it was with the duck eggs. And then I refilled the shells, put them back in the egg containers, and served them on the buffet with little spoons.
That is so cool.
Yeah, because the shells are, they're wondrous in and of themselves.
They are. They're like porcelain. And the reason you can immediately tell the difference, like let's say you have some white egg layers, is they're very they're smooth. They're super smooth and like a soft shell versus a regular chicken egg. So
yeah, ducks have more oil or something, and it's like they're basted already or something.
Yes.
Do ducks on your farm? Do ducks eat the same things that chickens eat?
Yes, they do. But they, you know, they are great foragers, and of course chickens are. And you know, in talking about the yolk, one of my chefs said, well, how do you get the yolk so yellow? I said, it's because they're foraging, and that's the difference. So you can have organic
feed. They're eating the green things and the bugs.
Yes. And, you know, and that also just cleans up a lot of insects and pests that would prey upon your gardens on your farm as well.
And you get really yellow eggs. We are talking to Mary Hillman from Mary's Farm. This is the Donalena Kitchen, and I want to mention that this is KHOI Community Radio. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. We are back. This is the Donald on a Kitchen. That was a fine tune. That was an Iowa-grown tune by Iowa treasure Al Murphy, a fine fiddler that lives over near Iowa City. He has been doing wonderful fiddle tunes for a long, long time. That was one called Pike's Peak. Today we are talking to Mary Hillman from Mary's Farm, and this woman is busy. She just does all kinds of good stuff, and she produces all sorts of good things for people to eat here in central Iowa. Mary, you also mentioned you have a day job, and you have a lot of interest in teaching children. So tell us about that.
I have been the director of the before and after school program at Perry Schools for the last 19 years. And the project started as a 21st Century Community Learning Center grant. And the concept is really, why should a school be closed just because the kids aren't there at school? Kind of to me, the old concept of the country schoolhouse, which used to be a centerpiece of a community. They would have elections there. They would have school plays there. They might even have church there, but a very welcoming place. And Perry is my home community. I graduated from Perry Schools. And I was so excited to serve the community because struggling with a lot of students of poverty and diversity in the community, which has really changed since I grew up there in the community. And those families really need care, starting at 6 a.m. in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. We have a lot of people that work in the ag industry for hybrid seed corn companies, work for commercial egg places down by Adel. Rose Acre Farms also is another big one, along with Tyson Meatpacking Plant. Mm.
So all those people that have children need a place for them to be at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
So Perry has a community daycare that you're basically doing.
We are a learning center.
A learning center, yes. All right. Good languaging there.
Yes. And the reason for that, daycares are really important. But a really quality before and after school program should be a lot more comprehensive. And we have an obligation. One of the things they were seeing with the students was attendance. They were seeing discipline issues because kids were getting left home unattended, homework completion. And then just really being aware, especially a lot of immigrants coming to Perry, what is Iowa all about? And so my connection, which is I've been a really very interesting life for myself and my degree, which was from Iowa State University in recreation management, I also, with my love of farming, it's just really tied into that whole world. And also wanting to be healthy and healthy eating and seeing so many of our students not getting that opportunity.
So this is school-age children
yes.
who can come to school very early and can stay very late if their parents are working. And do you feed them also?
Yes. I mean, the school, of course, during the school year, everyone at our school qualifies for a free breakfast because of our high free and reduced lunch. A lot of the students then, of course, also get their lunch there at the school or bring that. But in our program, we qualify for every student, regardless of their income level, gets a nutritious snack every night. And then in the summertime, we are open 12 hours a day for 9 weeks in the summer.
Wow.
Yes. And we're registered for 140 kids, and we're always usually full.
Oh, my.
And that's preschool through fifth graders. And our students get a free breakfast, a free lunch, which is also offered to everyone in the community 3 to 18 years of age. I piloted the project back in 2000, and we're still doing that. And then I worked with actually United Way out of Des Moines last year to get snacks provided for us after lunch. So we've done different things. But I also do a lot of grant writing.
Oh, my goodness.
To support the project. So we do charge a sliding fee scale to attend based on how people qualify for the federal lunch program. So I just say everyone pays their fair share. But it's incredibly affordable.
Oh, good. And it probably, since you have such a full attendance, well appreciated, too. The fact that it's been going on so long, too. It's a wonderful community service, a thing that communities should be doing, growing, not just growing crops, growing the economy. They're growing their children, too. How very good.
Yes. The name of my program is PACES, and that stands for Perry's Academic Cultural and Enrichment Services Program. When I had a kind of the Cadillac money of grant money at the beginning, I also had a huge middle school program, and I ran that up to 2 years ago. And I also had written a state grant to extend that. We also had high school programs, which we've turned into sustainability, and then also community events, which we brought back in the community. Data-driven is why we brought back, and we could see the most need was at that elementary level. And about 8 years ago, I saw a changing demographic of a need for adding – we used to just do kindergarten up – started in with a preschool wraparound service.
Whoa.
Because parents really struggling, you know, how do I get my kids to that preschool morning program or afternoon? I got to run them back and forth to the child care program. If I hire the HERTA bus, that's going to cost me extra money. And we keep the kids learning. So when I said we are a learning center, homework is required every night after school. We have a theme every year for our school year in our summers. We have a weekly theme, and within that weekly theme, we divide it up into our disciplines of reading and literature, history and geography, fitness and nutrition. I'm very big on STEM. I've gotten two different STEM grants for the program back to 2013 before it was popular, but it's awesome for kids. And music and the arts, of course, which always gets overlooked in schools in today's world.
Very good. You're feeding the souls, too. I trust you have help. Is there staff that helps with this? Or?
Yes. I have a teacher for each one of the grade levels. So in the morning, we do centers just as parents are arriving because they kind of come in. We have people waiting outside the door at 6, but then they'll come in. After school, the kids can walk right through the halls, and our program is located right inside the school. So we just borrow space.
Ah.
And so it's, you know, with that, it just makes good sense. I have a main office dedicated to us, but I have a separate preschool class, kindergarten class, first grade class, second grade class, third grade, and then fourth and fifth are together. I have adult staff, and we have people that have some just great personal experience, two people with teaching degrees that really want to do this, which we've been very blessed, a lot of longevity of my staff. Then I hire a lot of really awesome high school kids and college students, which are coming back right now.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yes, and that's my main staff in the summers. It's a great resume builder for them. It helps me with my budget tremendously because it's always very, very tight. And it's just a win-win. The kids really gravitate to those younger people. They're great role models.
Of course they do. Yeah.
And I've had a lot of students from the Hispanic community work for me that grew up in the program. Now are coming back to work for me, both in high school or from college. I've watched them.
Oh, Mary, that must be so rewarding.
It is. It's just, it's like, Jackie just graduated from here from Iowa State University and sent me back a picture and is asking for advice on interviewing. It's just, it's awesome.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. And this kind of takes you back to your connection to the land, the farm, to food. You have healthy eating and nutrition as a component of this. How do you teach kids about Iowa farms?
Well, one of the things I do in the summertime is each week is a theme, and by Friday, then we go on an educational field trip connected with that. And one of the places I brought them to every year is my farm. And I think, oh, it's just my little farm. It's no big deal. It's the favorite field trip. The kids love to come. And I set up stations so that each one of the groups rotate between the livestock. And I tell them all about laying hens, and I tell them all about broilers. And they get to do old-fashioned sack races. And then I set up the campfires. So a lot of kids have never made a s'more, so they get to do s'mores.
Oh, good.
Yes. And then we do a farm bingo game where they run all over the farm and try to find all the different vegetables and the plants. And I have a big grove with oak trees and hickory trees and ash trees. And so, you know, where's the garlic patch? Where's the potato patch? Where's the tomatoes? What are green beans? What's the zucchini? And, you know, there's always somebody that bawls over the farm cats because they're scared of the cats.
Oh, really? Oh, you must have some pretty ferocious cats there.
Well, I used to have but he was a lover. His name was Killer. And then also I get out, you know, the sidewalk chalk and just
oh, sure.
all that old-fashioned farm stuff. And mm-hmm. it's part of the program, we aren't doing video games after school or during the summer. We're not doing TV. If we do anything on the computer lab or iPads, I wrote a grant to get us some really nice iPads. We work very much with Iowa Public Television. And Trista Peitzman has been a huge partner of mine. And we piloted with her a number of projects to include, we had Sesame Workshop come to our program. And from New York City, they'd never been to Iowa. Mm. They came and piloted with our kids to bring back the electric company.
Oh, good.
And they loved it so much, they came back again the next year, provided a wonderful bus trip for our parents to go to the Iowa State Fair, where we met with the governor and the governor's wife. And from that, then electric company has came back on TV, which is a great, great, great science program. We work with them on some math programs. We've done some reading literacy. And this year they came and worked with us and brought us 30 tablets that our students could do all the educational games. It's all free, parents. So if you aren't aware of it, look up their website. It's amazing.
Oh, very good. There are people out there that are educating our children and educating our children well. You mentioned there's food. When the kids come to your farm, do they make a connection between the eggs that are laid to the things that they eat, or do they recognize things and do they eat their vegetables? I want to know.
You know, Perry has done a great job. A past nutrition director who has since has a state job up in Minnesota, a good friend of mine, Donna, wrote a fruit and vegetable grant. And if people were not aware, Senator Harkin was very big on that. And he actually came and visited Perry schools a number of times. And so our students, during the school day, get a fruit or vegetable snack every day during the school day. And so Perry has done a great job of really pushing that, always has a nice salad bar, vegetable bar available. And then if you know anything about grant writing, not the same things are always available, but I did a Healthy Kids General Mills grant at one point. And we were healthy. We were picked the Healthy Project of the Year and honored in D.C. at the National Press Club, which was awesome.
My.
Yes.
Good.
And they did a commercial. We also worked with the Basics Grant with Department of Public Health, Pick a Better Snack. They have age-appropriate lesson plans. And so my staff every week do a nutrition lesson with the kids. And we really promote fitness. And of course, I'm really big on that because I'm a runner and still a runner. And so trying to make that connection. Well, why am I eating my carrots or why am I eating my broccoli? And how is that going to help my body? And how's that going?
Wait, so you're a runner on top of all of this? Do you just run around the farm?
Yes, I do run around the farm. But my connection to Iowa State University is I was on the very first women's cross country and track and field teams because we were considered a club sport and women could not run and we had to petition the university to get a team. I still have my hand-sewn uniform and we had the first national title in cross country, but it was NAIA. So we don't have a banner for that, but I'll tell you what, that was one of the most awesome experiences of my life. Chris Murray was our coach, a volunteer, and he was a Canadian coach, and just all of us girls have gotten together over the years. So that's also just added to my healthy lifestyle. All my girls are runners, and I'm still running. I got to run a half marathon at Yosemite with a daughter this year, and I ran Dam to Dam again, which I ran back in 1980 with my grandson, who's a senior. I ran a mountain race that I started running at 25, which is 17 miles over a 13-foot pass on four-wheel drive Jeep road. I made it over. I was slow. Got to run Good Old Living History Farms again this year, which was pretty nasty.
Oh, good for you.
There was another race in there. But, of course, I had to do the turkey trot down in Des Moines
this
year.
So. Oh, good for you. I am so glad that someone with all your energy is on our side. Good food, good farms, and teaching our children how wonderful. Mary, give us some information on how to get in touch with you. And actually, let's talk a little bit again about Farm to Folk and how you can buy food from people like
right
Mary.
From the farmers all year round here in Ames.
Yes. So, Mary, how do you get in touch with you and your farm?
Well, you can get in touch with me on my cell phone Or you can call. I still have an old-fashioned landline with a voicemail, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. With my cell, you'd be more than welcome to text me a message as well. And also, if you get a hold of Farm to Folk, you can look at the website there. It has information.
Ah, very good.
What I think is really neat about that is you can pick and choose from different farmers, mm-hmm. but you go to one place to pick it up.
That's good. Yeah, so give the information for Farm to Folk because then we can get in touch with your farm. How do you get in touch with Farm to Folk?
Oh, you Google Farm to Folk, right? Okay. With no S on the end. And it's you just become a member, and then Marilyn, or we're having a new director this coming year, they send out an email with all the options. It usually comes in about Friday. You tell them what you want, and then you pick it up at the First Methodist Church downtown on Tuesday evenings. Couldn't be simpler.
Yes, and what I do there is I sell egg shares. So if you're not familiar with mm-hmm. that, what is nice about that, it's just like your garden vegetable shares. People pay me up front. It really helps a producer because when I go to buy feed, which I just did this week, you know, that was over $400, and they expect cash for that. Mm-hmm. So that really helps us producers. But you sign up for a dozen eggs for 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so that way you are guaranteed a dozen. Now, every week I have additional customers that order from me. So I'll know based on those when people submit an order, then how many dozen I do bring
and
over.
And sometimes she lists duck eggs, which is how I get them through Farm to Folk.
So. Yes. So if that's not listed, I'm sorry. I should put those back on again because I do have ducks.
Yes, please do. I didn't realize. I thought maybe the ducks weren't laying now.
So now you found out on the radio.
Yes.
Very good. Well, thank you for being with us today, Mary. Mary from Mary's Farm.
Yes, if we had an award from this show for the most humanitarian farmer of the year, it just might have to go to you for all your educational work.
Yes, it's not just growing things out of the ground, but growing community too. Thank you for being with us, Mary.
Thank you.
This is KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. And you can find us a website there that has a Donalana Kitchen page. And there's a recipe page there. And Donna's biscotti recipe is there on the page. So we're right up
to date. Oh, yeah, just in case you need to make some last-minute biscottis for yourself or your friends.
Very good. Very good. A little bit of music to get you in the mood for Christmas. And Donna, you had something you wanted to mention about cheese for Christmas.
Well, the one thing that happens this time of year is that and almost all of the places where you can buy cheese will end up having a truffle cheese. Now, I love truffles. They're very hard to come by here, and they are often very expensive anyway. So if you get them in the cheese, they're usually much more reasonably priced because you're just getting the crumbled ends and bits, but you get the truffle flavor. So what I like to do with the cheese, besides just eat it, it's really good in eggs. So scrambled eggs and scrape the truffle cheese in, or scrambled duck eggs and scrape the cheese in. Huh. So this year I really look forward to grabbing my truffle cheese.
Well, that's a good thing to, a special thing for Christmas.
Yeah, I made frittatas for the Cape Puttuck party for KHOI. And I just, what did I do? Sauteed onions and garlic and some peppers and vegetables and stuff like that. Then I scraped all the truffle cheese into it, put it into the oven and with the eggs and baked it right up. It was really easy.
Yum. Yum.
Got that umami, you know?
Umami.
The truffle umami.
There we go. There we go. I'd like to also mention a little thing that I've taken to doing this for Christmas, too. There is a torte that I've learned to make. A torte, of course.
How Germanic.
Ooh. Oh, a Linzer torte.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Actually, this is from a book that has a lot of recipes from Germany and Austria. What it says about the Linzer torte here, Linzer torte, a little pie pan, a little torte pan. It says, this is probably the Viennese dessert that is best known throughout the world. The word Linzer simply means it comes from the city of Linz in Austria. The Linzer torte is not a cake in the strictest sense of the word. It's more a pastry or a tart. It's particularly suitable for serving with afternoon tea. I like making this Linzer torte because, kind of picture this, it is like a cookie with jelly in it. The base and the little toppings on it are a really rich cookie sort of recipe, and you fill it with jelly. And
what kind?
Well, I used Iowa plum this year because I had a lot of Iowa plum.
Well, and we have to mention here that, of course, Lana makes her own jelly.
I've got lots of jelly. And I kind of mix and match whatever needs to be done. It does call for an 8-ounce cup of jam. You make this wonderful, wonderful pastry. And it's a cookie tasting sort of thing, but it's too crumbly to be a cookie. So you have to kind of press it into a tart pan. The kind with the removable bottom is very nice.
Oh, okay. Now it's making sense. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how this works. Right.
The removable bottom. Yeah. It took me a while to get the hang of
that. Those
are
kind of nifty, actually.
Those are good. Those are good. And it's really heavy on walnuts and nuts in general. But this has lots of ground nuts in it. A cup and a third of ground walnuts, a cup and a quarter of spelt or rice flour, or any other kind of flour.
Oh, so the walnuts are in the dough.
In the dough, yes. And these are ground fine. And for some reason, and 3/4 cup sugar, for some reason it calls for 2 egg yolks, uncooked, also ground up, kind of to make this.
To moisten it.
To moisten it,
and
yeah.
glue it together,
yeah,
basically.
It does.
Yes.
Okay. 5 tablespoons butter, zest of a lemon, ground cloves, ground cinnamon, and... Oh, and also 2 egg yolks uncooked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all in there. Mix it up.
So do you press that into the spray-form pan?
It's really crumbly, and it's very heavy on the nuts. You press it. You save a little bit out for the topping. Fill it with jelly, and you can kind of... It says you can roll this. I have never had any rolling it.
Wait, but do you bake it with the jelly in it?
Yes.
Huh.
And
okay.
you smush it into long snakes. It's supposed to be. And then you make this. I make a little lattice on the top.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
And then bake it.
And then the jelly squishes through the lattice. And when you put that on the table, it's really nice. It's kind of this cookie with jelly in it. It's called a Linzer torte. There is also the Linzer torte, that is a traditional thing. I also make one that is a chocolate Linzer torte, adding bittersweet chocolate melted to them,
well,
which is also
when you've
a big
got
hit.
That on the table, give me a call on it. I see that.
Anyway, so think of a Christmassy sort of thing, or any time, but I think of it
as a Christmas
thing.
Oh, so you use a sort of reddish or pink jelly, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, it kind of makes sticky, and it's very rich. You just need a little slice of this.
Oh,
and it's
the
very
sliver.
Nice with coffee. Or tea. Very good. Very good. So, I have been doing a little bit of Christmas baking. That's one of the things I made earlier. And I've been making cookies. And, time to get out those family recipe books and family recipes.
Oh, I had something on a cookie plate you made the other night. What was that with the chocolate on top?
A chocolate toffee squares. My mom's recipe. You make a heavily buttered, heavily brown sugar and flour, very flat
pastry layer. Do you roll that out? Or
no,
you
smoosh it.
Press it into the pan.
A cookie pan. Cook that for 12 minutes until it's cooked as a crust. Cover it with melted chocolate. Yeah? And, yeah, you can just use chocolate
chips. Wait, so you melt the chocolate and pour it on?
Melt the chocolate and pour it on.
Okay.
That's it. That's it. And then, of course, I like sprinkles, so I put sprinkles on, too. But
yeah, Lana's cookie plates are, of course, colorful.
Good time of the year for sprinkles. They're probably not good for you, but I sprinkle for Christmas. There I do. There I do. I want to thank Mary Hillman for being with us. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me today. And this is just, you guys are just awesome. So fun.
Thank
and
you.
I really think it's great that you are providing this education.
People don't have to be afraid of cooking because you can laugh while you do it. We can do that.
Right.
Yes, we can.
And then we give out these fabulous recipes.
We do.
And interspersed with a little food politics and policy. So because you have to understand where your food is coming from and what's going on around
yes,
all
we
of
do.
Those issues.
Yeah, we have information here too. And like I said, you can go to KHOIFM.org. That is the website here. You can actually listen to all past shows. Not only our Donna Lana show, but there's a lot of good local programming. People get on this radio station and they talk about their passions. And there's a lot of good programming. This radio station is on 24/7. It's a good public service here. It is. It is. You can go to KHOIFM.org and there's a donate button there too because we get by with your support. Your support. The Donna Lana Kitchen, go to our recipe page. There's a whole bunch of recipes.
Yeah, now you're going to have to put the Linzer Tort recipe up.
I should. It's from one of these recipe books that has all very, very fancy and all the lace around the edges. I can make this. It's just fine. So, have a happy bunch of holiday baking. Oh, a little thoughts about caroling and dancing. I went to an English country dance the other evening, because you can do that here in Ames. Look up the English country dance people. And some of the Christmas carols, the old English Christmas carols, they were originally written to be danced to. So it's
Oh, of course. They're quite hand-clapping, foot-stomping.
And warm yourself up. And so think about carols and dancing and that kind of thing. Very good. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thanks to Mary Hillman from Mary's Farm and Garden for being with us today. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, and we'll go out with music by John Williams and his guitar, Villancico de Navidad. It's a Christmas carol, too. So enjoy the Christmas, enjoy your community. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor, as usual. Happy holidays, everyone. Eat good food and enjoy life.